now from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey, good morning, everybody. Happy Monday to you. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester here with you on Sports Daily. We've got you for the next little while here, Max Power producing, and we're glad to have you here. A lot to get to on the show today. The news cycle is certainly picking up lately, as is just having some activity. We passed over the All-Star break, which is a slower time of the year, and here we go. More Chiefs contract news, the Royals back in action. We've got the aftershocks advancing. We've got KU's alumni team, K-State's alumni team advancing, and the TBT playing each other tonight. All kinds of fun stuff going on the show. Jalen Thompson, our Royals insider, is going to join us in a little while to discuss that opening series with the Marlins. Does it mean anything to what the Royals are trying to do, or is it just the beginning here, and we'll take it down to the wire at the trade deadline? It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, WBC Delano's debut brew, Hatfield's Mama, a German Kolsch with a clean, crisp character that's smooth and refreshing. Make history with Hatfield's Mama, Wichita Brewing Company, Delano's debut brew, available at all three WBC brew pubs. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Happy Monday. Good to see you. Looking forward to getting into it today. Training camp for the Chiefs begins in St. Joe this week as well. So a lot to get to on the program today.
Yeah, a lot of news from the Chiefs yesterday, and we'll get to that in the next segment. Just sort of recapping all the headlines here, Tommy. The Chiefs make a couple of splashes. They give George Karlaftis a big deal. We know that Rashi Rice is going to be in camp. We know that Jawan Taylor is banged up right now. Like, it was to kind of get Andy Reid to stand up there for the first time. There was a lot to dig through yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, he dropped a couple of big nuggets of information. Obviously, we knew about the Karlaftis signing before Andy Reid talked to the media, but he confirmed that they had gotten Karlaftis signed. And then talking about how Rashi Rice, it's going to be business as usual until the Chiefs know what the suspension is going to be. He'll be in camp with the team. But I thought really notably, Jawan Taylor is going to start the season, or at least start training camp, on the PUP list. With the knee injury, and no timeline on his return, what that's going to look like or anything. Obviously, the Chiefs have Josh Simmons. They feel like he's healthy on the left side. They signed Jalen Moore, who could probably play on the right side as well. That's going to be pretty interesting to see how things pan out with Jawan Taylor, at least right now, dealing with that knee.
Yeah, Andy Reid said it wasn't as serious as another injury they were dealing with, but they'll just rotate Josh Simmons in. I don't know. The question was asked to Andy Reid about Jawan Taylor. How do the initial left tackle rotations come? And I'm not sure if it was, I don't know. I think that Jawan Taylor has never been considered for left tackle. So I'm not sure what that was about, but he's out either way. So they're going to get, they'll get Moore and they'll get Simmons in and they'll get reps. You sent me that yesterday. And honestly, like, Jawan Taylor being healthy is important to the Chiefs as much as, he's had his issues and everything else. Is it the worst thing in the world, though? Like, he knows everything. He's been there a long time. If Simmons and Moore both get a few extra reps while he recovers from his injury, probably not. They're both new. They're both new to this thing. So, you can polish that up and it's probably fine for the Chiefs.
Yeah. I mean, I predicted, as soon as the Chiefs signed Moore that eventually he would be the starting right tackle. I really felt like at some point throughout the course of this season, Jawan Taylor, healthy or not, would eventually sort of be phased out. The Chiefs aren't going to re-sign him. They're not going to bring him back. And so you've got to start looking at a succession plan at right tackle. Josh Simmons looks to be the future left tackle for the team. And that frees up Jalen Moore as a free agent signing for the Chiefs to see what they've got in him. I wonder if this potential, changeover is maybe accelerated with the fact that Jawan Taylor is not healthy. I don't know. I mean, Andy Reid didn't really give a timetable. He did say it wasn't overly serious, but didn't really give a timetable on Taylor getting back to action. And so with extra reps for those guys, and especially Jalen Moore on the right side, that may be, that plan may be accelerated a little bit, because I don't think that they signed Jalen Moore to be a backup on that line. I think they liked him, and I think they liked what they thought they could get out of him. He had been a career backup, but had been, I think, blocked in a large scale in San Francisco. Yeah. And so I think they like the potential of what Jalen Moore is, and signed him to be potentially a long-term starter. And I wonder if that plan is accelerated now with Juwan Taylor on the shelf.
Well, look, I think the best case scenario for the Chiefs is that Moore and Simmons are your tackles. That just means that's because they're both really good. We know kind of what Juwan Taylor is, but the best case scenario for the Chiefs in general is that all three are healthy, and then they're sorting it out on the field. They didn't sign Jalen Moore to be a backup. They didn't sign Juwan Taylor to be a right tackle either. So, like, they are not beholden to this stuff, probably, especially this year. And just get in there and take the reps. And Avery did say that yesterday. We're going to start with whoever the best player is, when they talked about who's going to be the left tackle, like whoever plays the best. And that's what you've got to look at with the Chiefs. But they need the rotation. They need the depth.
They do.
Need Juwan Taylor. He just has a bad contract.
Yeah, the worst case scenario, I think, for the Chiefs is if Juwan Taylor can't go to start the season, if that knee injury lingers, and then they realize that Josh Simmons isn't ready either. And then you've got, you know, your two ends that they can't play. And so Jalen Moore can't play both positions. And so what does the depth look like there for the tackles for Kansas City? So that's the worst case scenario. Andy Reid, and it's been a while since we've heard from Andy Reid. He doesn't overly hype things up. I mean, he tries to downplay things a lot. That's just kind of what he does. And so, yeah, I mean, he said that it's not very serious for Juwan Taylor. I mean, we'll see what that actually looks like. I wouldn't be overly optimistic that we see him at all in training camp. I don't know if he'll be back in time.
Oh, I think he'll be back before the end of training camp. He said yesterday, Christian Fulton, he said, if Taylor is ahead of Fulton with whatever. He didn't get into the specifics of either of them, but Fulton is
behind.
But
what's the point then of utilizing Juwan Taylor in training camp? Like, I just don't see what the benefit is. Like, if he's dealing with an injury,
what's the point of using anybody in player? I mean, they're players. They need reps. They need training camp. Like, it's Andy Reid runs a tough camp.
I get it. And that's a big reason why, if I'm the Chiefs and Juwan Taylor, I'm holding Juwan Taylor back because he's dealing with an injury right now. And you know that Andy Reid runs a tough camp. Why take that risk? Get him healthy, put him on the shelf. I don't think we'll see Juwan Taylor in training camp. Now, preseason could be different, but I don't think there's really any point to do that, knowing that he's coming back from that injury.
Yeah, we'll wait and see. I mean, either way, these young guys are, well, new guys, in one case, they're going to get reps. And Fulton is another piece. Look, Fulton's got it. They need the depth in the secondary. There's no question. And I don't, you know, he didn't get into the specifics of either injury, but if he is behind Juwan Taylor, then it tells you that it's a more serious injury concern at this point. I don't know that any of it is overly serious at this point, because it's about to start training camp and there's lots of time for guys to get right, get back, and do everything. But Fulton is a guy who hasn't experienced anything with the Steve Spagnuolo defense, so you'd like to get him in for sure. But the Chiefs, they'll take it slow with all of these guys, and then we'll get the rookies in, and we'll dig into the George Karlaftis scenario. We see it after we see TJ Watt. It's all very interesting. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, we'll dive into that for the Chiefs. That's the big news yesterday. That random Twitter guy got it right again. He had it again. There you go. But we'll get into it next. It's Albrock and Castor at Sports Daily on a Monday. Don't go away.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Hey, you want to win a trip to see Zach Brown Band, Love and Fear, live at the Sphere in Las Vegas this December, including a two-night stay in a suite at the Venetian. The only hotel directed to the Sphere. Connected directly to the Sphere. It's easy to enter the national contest for a chance to win a trip to the show. Download the Odyssey app and listen to KFH for at least an hour. Learn more at odyssey.com/Zach. That's Z-A-C. Thanks to Messina Touring Group. Tommy, have you seen the Sphere down there? Have you been to Vegas since they built that thing?
No, I've not. I have not been down there since they built that.
It's wild. It's wild, and I've only seen it from the outside. It's so cool. It's so cool looking. Just like a giant circular TV screen. They put all kinds of fun stuff up on there.
Do I have to give up my man card if I've never really been a Vegas guy? I've been a couple of times. I don't mind it. But I don't, like, I know there are people that love going to Vegas, and I've never really been that guy.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know what to say to you right now. It's gotten too expensive.
Yeah, I don't like losing money, and I'm not a good enough gambler to be able to know what I'm doing to be able to not lose my money. And so I think I know the temptation there, and I'm worried that I would fall into that trap and I would have to take out a second mortgage on my house.
Yeah, I mean, that's intense. I would say if that's a concern, yeah, probably is not the best place for you.
Yeah.
But if you can take a wad of cash that you know you're probably going to lose and not worry too much about it, it's the best place in the world. I love Vegas. I love craps. I love the vibe. I love that everybody's having a good time. I love the whole thing, except that it's really expensive now. Didn't used to be that way.
I still don't know how to play craps, and you tried to show me. I've had multiple people try to teach me, and for one reason or another, it doesn't click in my head. I cannot pick it up.
You can simplify it as much as you want. You're just trying to roll this number before this number, and but it's the best. It is a party every time you
play. When I've watched you play craps, and I've done that a couple of times, you're using a completely different language. Like, I don't even know the words that are coming out of your mouth. And I think that's the confusing thing.
Yeah, you're just screaming stuff. But you get there. Like, you learn it. I didn't know it either until I sat at a table when the dealers kind of taught me at like 4 a.m. Speaking of Vegas, when I was 21 years old, my parents took me and I just was like lost in the chaos and trying to like, I was like, oh, play this and just like throwing money out there. And they're like, stop. Like, we'll show you how to play. It's 4 a.m. It's like, let's do this the right way. But man, it's fun though. I everybody agrees too. Like if you talk to people that people, no, I don't ever hear anybody be like, yeah, craps is okay. Like that knows how to play that craps is okay. No, it's usually like, oh yeah, craps. I don't waste my time with anything else. Once you learn how to play and you get on like one heater and experience that rush of a happy table, it's the best. Anywho, go see the Sphere and you can play lots of craps.
I will say, going back to the actual contest, Zach Brown Band, they're phenomenal. I've seen them a couple of times and they're one of the best shows I've ever seen. So I can only imagine what it would be like having them at the Sphere.
Widely considered, from everything I've ever heard, one of the better concert bands ever. And yes, I think that'll be an awesome show. Glad to have you able to enter for that. We'll tell you more about that as we make our way through the week. All right, let's go back to the Chiefs. George Karlaftis gets his deal. We have talked about that. Well, first, let's get to a comment from Rick based on what we were just talking about. He said he hopes we speculate on Christian Fulton being on the injured list too. Neither of us like Juwan Taylor. We don't need to speculate about anything. Andy Reid said they're both on the PUP list. So it's not a speculation. Fulton and Taylor are both there. It's not that I don't like Juwan Taylor. I don't like Juwan Taylor's contract. Juwan Taylor's an average right tackle. They're paying him to be a left tackle. So that's what's made it hard. It's just a financial restriction. The Chiefs will be a worse team if he doesn't play. Like he's better than replacement value. He's an average tackle. He gets penalized too much, but he's fine. He's just overpaid. That's all we ever say with Juwan Taylor. He just has a really big contract and it's at a spot where you don't need a really big contract.
Well, and the fact that, I mean, you go back to when the Chiefs brought him in, they brought him in with the purpose to be the left tackle. And that never happened. He never played at left tackle. And I mean, that was the part of the reason why they signed him, a large part of the reason to be the future and long-term left tackle on that team. And so knowing that and knowing that he's never moved over and played that, and they've had a revolving door at left tackle ever since that, I think that's part of it too for me. And, you know, look, I do agree that they need him on the field this season, but I do think that the more that you can get some of these other guys, and whether that's Jalen Moore or others, to be able to get reps on the right side of the line with Juwan Taylor on the shelf, you're probably looking at what the future plans are at that position long-term for the Chiefs. As far as Christian Fulton is concerned, I think where I'll speculate is that the Chiefs absolutely need to have him on the field for sure in that secondary, because it's a very thin secondary, especially at the cornerback position. I mean, you go and you look at who they've got on that depth chart, I would imagine that Christian Fulton is one of, I mean, he might be the most experienced cornerback on that roster. I mean, Chamari Connor is there. You know, I know people like him. Joshua Williams is there. I think he's got some potential. But Christian Fulton is the most proven commodity, I would suggest, at cornerback. And if he's not there, then you're going to be that much thinner in your secondary.
And I believe, and I'm just like, I think they have, I think they have him like defined as a slot corner, which is what he's played, I believe. So it's like a specific need for them that he's set to fill. I'm not sure. And again, we don't know the severity of any of this stuff, and it's training camp. So it's hard to, like, you know, the difference in training camp and the real season as far as recovery, it's all very different. Like, they're going to take it slow with guys this time of year. So we'll see. I hope it's not serious. George Karlaftis is making serious money. We don't have all the exact contract details. We only essentially know it's 4 years and $88 million. So what that would do is give him $22 million a year on average, which is basically the same money they just gave Trey Smith. I know it's different positions, but it would put him right now, I believe, if I can decipher these lists correctly, it would put him just outside, Tommy, the top 10. And we said last week we were just guessing, and we guessed right. Like, what would it take? And our guess was that he'd need to get paid like a top 10 or 15 tackle. That's exactly what he's getting paid at. And that's probably a fair deal. I can't wait to see the contract details to see how they maneuvered this out. It's apparently 32 guaranteed at signing of 88, so a little more than a third. It's 62, I believe we know, of total guaranteed money. It's an extension, I believe, too. So I think he doesn't become an unrestricted free agent until 2031. So we've got it. Look, we've got to get some more details on the exact language of the contract, and even the contract tracking sites don't have it yet, which makes me think we just don't have it. We can stack it up on average, though. And on average, it puts him just outside the top 10. That's right where we thought he'd end up. And I think for the Chiefs, the fact that he took a deal like that just outside the top 10, that's probably a financial win for the Chiefs if he's healthy.
Yeah, I think so, because there's always the potential that he could be a top 10 edge rusher.
Absolutely.
Right? And yeah. So if you're getting him at a price where he's outside of the top 10, and then he continues to grow and mature and get better and better and better, then that could end up being a really smart financial move for Kansas City. The one thing that I will say is that on the flip side, I mean, there is risk there. And if you're going to go glass half empty, he's been in the league for, what, 3 years, 4 years now? And he's been good. He's not been great. And so has he hit a peak of, you know, will he get any better? And so you're locked in to a contract for quite a long time. He's what, signed through 2031, I think?
I think that's right.
Is when the end of that contract is. So you could, on the flip side, if he doesn't continue to get better as the years go on, you could be saddled with George Karlaftis for quite a long time. Is that necessarily the worst thing in the world, though, if he's a good but not great edge rusher? I think that it might be a little bit more, you might feel more secure about that position as opposed to having to go out and try to find somebody on the open market.
It's a good thing. I mean, they paid Frank Clark the most money at his position at the time they did it, right? I believe that's right. I think it was the biggest at the time when they did it. It was close to it. It was a lot of money. And he never had more than 8 sacks. Now, we know how critical he was in postseasons, certainly. But in the regular season, I mean, he really wasn't that productive. And so Karlaftis has been more than that. I only bring him up not as like a knock on Frank Clark, because he helped them win Super Bowls. There's no question about that. It's that they were, you know, they were overpaying there and they made it work. They need it so badly to be able to do the things they want to do defensively that if Karlaftis just gives them what he's given them now and doesn't grow anymore, which is probably unlikely, he'll probably get at least a little bit better. But even if he just stays the same, I think it's a fair deal, because right now I think his sack numbers, you're looking at him as like a top 15 to 20 guy in the league, which is good, which is, you know, when there's 64 of them in the league starting, like that's pretty good. And that's about what he's getting paid at. Now you bake in, well, what if he gets a lot better? And then you go back around something we didn't get to last week, and you look at what TJ Watt just got paid at 31 years old. TJ Watt's making double what George Karlaftis is going to make. Now, I think TJ Watt's great. I've told you, I think George Karlaftis has room to grow, but you know, the Chiefs couldn't make him one of the top guys, and they didn't. So I like this for the Chiefs quite a bit. But are you going to try to tell me that TJ Watt is, you know, worth twice as much as George Karlaftis, is twice as productive? Absolutely not. And so I look at those deals. Like I look at these deals for the top guys, TJ Watt, Myles Garrett, who are incredible players, Max Crosby, incredible players. Those aren't good contracts. Those guys aren't going to win those teams aren't winning Super Bowls. So like, I don't know. Like, I think that it's a position that's being overpaid in general. My opinion. I know it's important because they put pressure on the quarterback, but I just look at those deals. It's like wide receiver was way back in the day. There was a time before the league changed the rules and did everything where you basically, like, the top paid receivers, those teams never had a chance. And I'm starting to feel that way about some of these edge rushers. Like, don't you think all of those teams, the Raiders, the Browns, the Steelers, Danielle Hunter for the Texans is the other one, but his is a short deal. But don't you think all those teams would be better served using that money for three or four players to help them win?
I mean, I think it depends on who the player is. I'll give you an example of a player that I feel like the team absolutely had to have. And considering they didn't have him, that really hampered their chances at going all the way. And that's last season in the Detroit Lions. And Aiden Hutchinson went down with that broken leg. I think they absolutely had to have him down the stretch and in the postseason. And they didn't win a Super Bowl due, I think, in large part to the fact that they didn't have Hutchinson out on the field. He's going to be due for a contract. And I guarantee you that after what the Lions saw with him being out down the stretch with that broken leg, that they're going to pay him, because they probably recognize that they missed out on a championship run without him.
I get it. But a part of his value for them and that team as a whole is the money that he commands is being used in a lot of other places for them to have the best offensive line in football. And man, you want to talk about devastating injury news. They just lost one of their tackles for the season. But that's how they pay their offensive line that much. That's how they retool a total defense to try and get them better. I mean, the players are important singularly, but Trey Hendrickson wants this great big deal for the Bengals, and he's been incredible. But Trey Hendrickson by himself is not going to have, the Bengals aren't going to be this great defense, because they had Trey Hendrickson last year and they were the worst defense in football. So like, I think it's,
he was the only guy they had on the defense,
with
by
this
the way.
Position. Oftentimes, I think we try to treat it like a quarterback is on offense, and it is not the same thing. It's just not. Like, yes, quarterbacks command the money because you have to have them to have a chance. I don't think you have to have an expensive end to win a championship. You know what I think the Cowboys should do with Micah Parsons? I think they should trade him. Look at what the Cowboys think they shouldn't be given. Micah Parsons and Dak Prescott, $100 million combined a season? That is not a winning formula. I'm glad TJ Watt got paid. TJ Watt's awesome. The Steelers aren't going to win a Super Bowl. The Browns aren't going to win a Super Bowl. You got to get down to Nick Bosa and the Niners, who, you know, look at the injuries and things he's dealt with. Like, there's not a great correlation right now. If you go and look at the teams that are paying their ends this way, with direct success to championships. Now, I think the better path is to draft them well. That's what I think the better path is. George Karlaftis is somewhere in the middle. I don't think he qualifies to what we're talking about completely. I think you can live in the range they're paying Karlaftis. That's why I like the deal. And it's going to keep resetting. Parsons is going to get paid. Hutchinson's going to get paid. Like the money we just saw TJ Watt and Myles Garrett get is going to get surpassed again. And the Chiefs, hopefully, if they can sit here with Karlaftis getting them 10 sacks a year at $22 million, it's going to be a steal. So I like the deal for the Chiefs and Karlaftis. I think that's the sweet spot. What they just did is the sweet spot for that edge rusher. If you can get them in young and they're good and you can keep them in sort of that middle of the pack, but I don't think you have any business if you want to win a Super Bowl resetting the market for a defensive end. I just don't. That's just my
opinion. I also wonder what the motivation is for George Karlaftis to not want to go and test that market. Now, he's right outside the top 10, so he's not going to garner money like a TJ Watt or a Micah Parsons.
$60 million guaranteed, I guess.
I mean, that's great money. Like, that's nothing to sneeze at. But you could conceivably be done with your rookie contract if you're George Karlaftis. Maybe even take another step forward and maybe be right inside the top 10 and go and get more money from another team on the market. And so there's, I know that there's a lot of other factors than just the money out there. And I know Karlaftis, it's the team that drafted him, and you've got this dynasty and championship runs and all of that. You know, maybe he didn't want to go test the open market, but I do think that there's a scenario where he could have ended up making a whole lot more money on the market.
There is, but so let's think about it a couple ways. One, he gets extended 2 years before he's a free. He wasn't a free agent until after next year. And so that's a big piece of it with the injury risk in the NFL. The other is Garrett and Watt just got their deals, and Hunter all just got their deals at the age Karlaftis will be when he actually does hit free agency. So, and I'm sure, and again, we don't have all the contract details. I'm sure there are outs both ways. I'm sure there are ways the Chiefs, if they need to, will be able to bail. There's a probably, I think he's pretty savvy here, but just because he wasn't going to be a free agent for 2 years. So now, like, you just saw, you're seeing 30-year-old defensive ends get paid boatloads of money. If that production is there, he's still got time for the big payday. But this is, I mean, the most, you know, this is enough for whatever, however you want to look at it. And he gets it 2 years early. With the injury risk of the NFL involved, I'd say it's a pretty good win for him. I mean, his production isn't off the charts. It's good, and the Chiefs have to have it, and they love his energy, and they love the player, and we all love the player. Who doesn't love George Karlaftis and the way he plays football? I think it's a very smart deal on both sides for me. Like, I like this one quite a bit. So the other big storyline, obviously, with them to look at early in camp is Rashee Rice. The Chiefs are probably pretty smart for getting a George Karlaftis deal done right before. So they maybe have to talk a little less about Rashee Rice. Andy Reid, as he always does, he kind of tries to address it right out of the gates and then doesn't give you a lot of information, said he hasn't really had any contact. But basically, that Rice is going to be there. They're going to rotate him in just as planned, and they'll deal with it, whatever it is. And they'll have other guys that are in the rotation that'll be ready. I heard something, and I've kind of seen this, and I do think it's worth talking about. I don't think, because everybody loves conspiracy theories with the Chiefs and the timing of all this. I think that's being dramatic. But I will say, if you're trying to time this and you're Rice or the Chiefs, don't you think it, because remember, like, this wasn't supposed to be cleared up until a court case later. And then I'm going to just speculate and guess here that Rice probably said, you know what, like, I'm going to plead out and we're going to get this thing done, because you can do that at any point. If you're going to do it and you know a suspension's coming, it probably does make some sense to do that while you're recovering from an ACL injury. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if there was any thought given, because people are talking about that and they're being too dramatic about it. But the reality is, like, if you know you're pleading guilty, which we've known that for a long time, I think, like, if you know you're going to do that, he's healthy by all accounts. He would play. but would it make sense to do some of it in that beginning part of that recovery? Probably so. I mean, there's that side of it, too. It does make some sense.
Yeah, it does give him a little bit of a longer time, a longer opportunity to get back into game shape. And he may be there right now.
He gets suspended.
Yeah, he may be there now. Like, I know that it looks like as of now he's going to be going through camp. But if games started today, I would imagine, I mean, the guy's a freak athlete. I would imagine that, you know, he's probably good to go now as it is.
The videos I've seen, he looks good.
He looks good. But I don't think there's anything wrong necessarily with if he does get suspended for the first however many games that he's taking that time to get even better. And then you've got a really highly anticipated return whenever that is, whether that's week 5 or week 7 or week 9, you know, depending on the length of time that he's suspended. I don't think that is the worst thing in the world. And again, we'll find out exactly what direction the NFL wants to go. But I would imagine that when that penalty comes down, we're not going to see any kind of appeal. We're not going to see any kind of, like, he's going to accept that penalty and, you know, we'll move on with our lives.
He's been ready to accept everything. But, you know, say what you want. Like he stepped up immediately to try to, you know, to get some, at least financial assistance to these families. I mean, there were people that were seriously, seriously injured. So he's been doing that. He has admitted guilt sort of right out of the gates with this thing. And now, of course, the guilty pleas and all this stuff. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But Andy Reid basically just saying he'll rotate in just like he normally would with everybody else. And he's had no conversations about a timetable, which is, you know, certainly not true. But there's just nothing there. We just wait for the league to come down with a suspension. What I don't know is whatever the game suspension is, let's say they do, you know, 6 games. I believe, can still go through camp and do everything he would up into those games as normal. Now, there would be a point that the Chiefs would pull that back and prepare to not have him for 6 weeks. But I don't think it's going to change much between now and a month from now, whatever the number is. And I do still suspect, based on all the reporting, that we'll get it before the start of this season. We'll get the ruling from the NFL.
Yeah, and it's also probably not the worst thing in the world for the Chiefs to see what they've got in some of these fringe wide receivers, the young guys, the Jalen Royals of the world, sure. And then the guys
in his role.
Right, yeah. And the guys that we talk about every single year about will there be a roster spot for them. Now you've got a little bit more of a door open to show what you can do throughout training camp, throughout preseason, all of that, because – you know, we're pretty sure that we're not going to see Rashee Rice, at least for a period of time, to start the season. So I would love to see what the Chiefs have in Jalen Royals. I would love to see if there's, you know, whether it's a Nico Remigio or others that are at the bottom of the depth chart, you know, to see if they can come in and step in, you know, and be productive.
Yeah, they, you know, they don't have Justin Ross. He was let go. So he's out of that mix. But I don't anticipate that any of those guys you just mentioned are going to be factors. I think they have enough other guys, but yeah, maybe somebody does. I don't think they will. They could have last year, and the Chiefs had to go get outside help. I think it's more about, you know, Hollywood Brown getting the reps he missed out on last year, and do they envision the exact same role for him? You have Juju earlier now than you had last year, right? They brought him in. When did they bring him in last year? Was the season hadn't started yet? Has it had it when they brought in Juju?
I think it was right before the season, I believe.
That's what I thought, but it wasn't this early. So you've got him in there. Maybe if you need to, the thing they can do is with Rice is like whatever position they envision for Rice. Now, maybe you let some other guys work that spot when you weren't anticipating them being that spot. So if you had Juju or, you know, Royals or Brown, like potentially playing a different spot, it's like, well, can one of those guys play Rice's spot until he gets back? I think that gives you a little bit of help. It's probably good to have Rice there with them because Rice is very good at what he does. But we'll all sit back and wait. But I think the anticipation is still that it's all coming before the beginning of the season. And we're off to the races with a bunch of Chiefs news right before this slow off season has elevated between Trey Smith's huge contract, you know, relatively speaking, Karloftis basically getting the same contract, but it doesn't feel as huge, relatively speaking, because of what other guys are getting paid. The Rice news, like now we're starting to get into that groove here, and it's, you know, it's football camp, and Andy Reid's going to run these guys to death like he always does. And he's not going to make any apologies about it. He does the same thing every year. He's like, you know, within the rules, but I listen. Yesterday he said something to the effect of, I listen to the players, and every year the players at the end of the year, they're like, man, I'm glad we were running that XYZ drill, because we just did it again.
He's
not going to change what he does.
It's never failed too. I mean, we've got the hottest, you know, days of the year happening now and this week and next week. And I know it's, you know, going to be probably just as hot in St. Joe, you know, during this as well. So it's always a welcome to the NFL deal for the rookies. Who was the rookie last year? Was it Worthy that was puking on the sideline? A rookie that was puking on the sideline, and you're like, all right, welcome to Andy Reid in training camp. This is what they do up in St. Joe. So it's always brutal, but I think it ends up being good for those guys.
You remember the year it was hot and Travis Kelce was like getting in fist fights. It's like just total, like we've all been there. Absolute frustration, anger of just like how hot it is. And oh man, it's so funny too, because you would imagine, at least I would, if I'm this star college athlete and you're like, I finally made it. All right, now I'm a pro, and you get to Chiefs camp and it's probably just like being back in high school at two-a-days. What the hell is this? But the good news for the Chiefs and Andy Reid is you've got all your leaders like totally bought in. So like, where are you going to even look to complain when the old men, Jones and Kelce and Mahomes, are out there hoofing it with everybody else? Like, what are you going to say? Like, you just got to go.
Well, and you know, they're basically bunking up together in dorm rooms during the time. And I mean, it's a good experience for those younger players and the guys that have not been part of an Andy Reid team before, to know what they're getting themselves into when they start, you know, training camp the way that they do. So I think it's always been a good thing. I know that throughout the course of training camp, everybody has all eyes on what's going on up there. We'll get more news and nuggets as it goes on about the development of players and what things look like. And I don't anticipate things slowing down at all.
It's going to be an intense camp. I've kind of got my eye on Royals with this Rice news. Rookies never acclimate quickly for Andy Reid. I get it, but they did take him. He's there. I don't know. I think the Rice thing could sting a little bit. It's going to be a very different offense without him. I don't think it will be the elite offense that I envisioned without him there. I'm trying to like find a way for it to be that. It was certainly better at the end of the year when they got Hollywood and they got started to get guys back, but without Rice, but it wasn't what I keep envisioning for this top shelf offense. So I'm trying to like look at this and recalibrate expectations for the Chiefs. Like, what if they win one less game without Rice, or two less games? What if it's, you know, what if they're a 3 seed in the postseason and they had to play maybe 2 road games, like at Baltimore and then at Buffalo or whatever it is? I'm trying to think about all that stuff, but the Rice being gone a while is going to, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it takes you from a great offense to a good offense, and
think that's a best case scenario.
Well, I mean, look at the number of games that they won last year with Rice on the shelf, and
they
even
won a lot of games, but they weren't a good offense.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, they were still winning games, and so
right. Yeah,
okay. You know, I'm not ready to change my expectations on what the end result is for the Chiefs during those games that Rashi Rice is not playing. I'm not ready to change that, because I think that even we've seen it. It's been proven before that the team can still win football games without Rashi Rice on the field. You want to have him there.
No question.
You want to have him there. Absolutely. You want to have him anchoring the passing game. Absolutely you do. But I think you've got another year of Xavier Worthy, another year older. He's more acclimated to the system. Hollywood Brown looks to be healthy and ready to go. Travis Kelce looks to be in fantastic shape to be a pass catcher this season. I'm not willing to change my expectations, even if Rashi Rice is gone for, let's say, 8 games. I'm not ready to change that yet.
I'm just ready to change expectations for how great the offense can be with him gone, I guess is what I'm saying. You want to know who has, like, Hollywood Brown, the opportunity for him right now is tremendous. Tremendous to step into a larger role. All right, we'll come back. We got to get to some Royals baseball. We got to get to some TBT basketball. It's all coming in the next hour of Sports Daily. All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrockton, Tom McCaster. We are glad to be here with you on this Monday. We've got Jalen Thompson, our Royals insider, coming up later this hour to help us navigate that Marlins series and look ahead to tonight's debut game against the Cubs. Should be a fun series for the Royals. We'll get to that as we make our way through. We've got to talk some of the aftershocks in the TBT. An exciting weekend. They looked really good last night. A lot of these new faces sort of leading the way. Scottie Scheffler gets another tip of the cap in his career. We'll get into, you know, his resume up at this point. He's starting to sniff Tiger territory. So we'll get into all of that. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, WBC Delano's debut brew, Hatfield's Mama, German Kolsch with a clean, crisp character, smooth and refreshing. Make history with Hatfield's Mama, Wichita Brewing Company, Delano's debut brew. It's available at all three of the Wichita Brewing Company brew pubs. We come back, Tommy. Let's go into the Royals briefly on the Marlins series, and we'll get more in depth with Jalen Thompson in a little bit, and then we'll get to TBT and a little British Open Championship in the next segment. So, look, that was disappointing to lose 2-3 to Miami. They are now 5.5 games back of the wild card. I would tell you, though, that I was at least pleased that in two of those three games offensively, they looked pretty good. You know, the first game, it took them a minute, but to come all the way back and then you lose it at the end, which is really, really disappointing. It gets into the extra innings thing, which I really am sick of the extra inning ghost runner thing. I'm so over it. It's fine. It's the same rules for everybody. I just don't think we need it anymore because the games are moving fast enough. I think we can just play them as normal. I hate that it's putting these relievers, like I feel terrible for these relievers that have to get out there and inherit a runner at second with nobody out. Anywho, they lose. And so now they lose 2-3 in a series. We really needed to see him win 2-3. But, you know, the remedy to that's pretty simple. Now you win the Cubs series when maybe we didn't expect them to win the Cubs series, and they're right back where they wanted to be.
Yeah, the one thing about the Marlins is that they've got nothing to lose. They're out of a playoff hunt, and they're kind of starting to gel, and they're having fun. I mean, you watch them, and it's like, hey, they're kind of like the Bad News Bears out there. So it's kind of fun to watch them, but they were playing free and easy where you could definitely tell that the expectation and the pressure were on the shoulders of the Royals. You now go and play a Cubs team that they do have pressure on their shoulders. And so I wonder how that will change the way that series plays out. But for the Marlins, I mean, in that series, yeah, it's rough when you've got Estevez on Friday not be able to get it done, and then Ursig on Saturday not be able to get it done. Those are your two anchors in the back end of the bullpen. But at the same time, on Saturday's game, they weren't able to score any runs, and you have to play pretty near perfect to be able to win a game like 1-0 or something like that. So the margin wasn't there on Saturday, but at least it was a nice bounce back yesterday. They've got to start winning series, though. They've got to start with this series against the Cubs. You've got the Guardians later this week, so you've got, you know, an interdivisional matchup between these two teams, and so you've got to take advantage of those situations when they come up. I'm hopeful that the way that their offense came alive on both Friday and Sunday, that can be carried on, you know, throughout the course of this week.
Yeah, I that's the thing. Like, had they not scored any runs in that series, I would be having a very different conversation here this morning, but they did, and it didn't go their way on the road, and that's okay because they did. The offense continues to show us signs of life.
Salvi specifically showing signs of life. I mean, he's got that power back, which is really important.
He's back. He is back. Like, he looks normal now. Jack Caglione had a couple of really nice at bats. He took one the other way finally, which has been a problem for him because pitchers are just continue to pitch him away. That was a good sign. And again, like, those are the things realistically now when we talk about the deadline, those are the things that are going to have to make the offense better. By the way, Eugenio Suarez, who we've mentioned, has hit like 6 home runs since we left the air. So that ain't going to happen. That's not happening.
Did you know that there has never, I found this out from Jeff Passan on social media over the weekend, there's never been a player that has been traded mid-season when that player has 35 home runs or more. Like that just doesn't happen. And he now is over 35 home runs. I think doesn't he only trail Judge and Raleigh in home runs?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Ohtani. He's the National League. Yeah, he's the National League leader. I saw that. I saw another article that said he may be like this may be putting them into a mode where they don't want to sell anymore. Like they feel like they can contend now. So it's like, all right. But either way, it ain't happening for the Royals. Like that's a no. That's a non-factor. They're not going to get him now. I can't. I mean, just like, and you know, quick aside, betting. You want to know the one game he didn't hit two home runs in that series?
The one game that you bet on?
He was the last leg. I had a three-leg home run parlay, Tommy. So I went to a concert on Friday, and I forgot that I made the bet. I like to do that when there's like free bets or bonus bets or get your money back bets. I love doing home run parlays because the odds are outrageous. Like they're insane, right? So I don't remember who the first two legs are. I think it was Junior Caminero and Byron Buxton. And they hit, and I'm at that concert, and I look, and I'm like, oh, crap, on my $5 bet. Like, there was, like, a $55 cash-out option on it. And I looked at one of my buddies who also likes to bet, and he was like, I think you got to take that. And I'm like, yeah, I probably should. Eugenio Suarez hadn't started his game. He was the last leg to win a bunch of money. And I'm like, yeah, I probably should. Didn't think it, did, like, totally forgot about it, spaced out after the concert. I'm like, oh, crap, I forgot to cash that out. And I look, and he didn't hit one. And then that knife got twisted a little bit more when I see he hit two in each of the next two games. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That would have been one of my favorite hits of the year. A three-leg home run. Go put three home runs together and look at what the odds are so stupid to hit those. But anyway, Suarez. He's not going to be a Royal. He's not going to be a Royal.
He will not.
I don't think anybody else.
He's going to continue to be a Diamondback, I would imagine.
Oh, boy. How far back are they?
They're back to 500. I think they swept the Cardinals.
They're back to 500, 4.5 back. What are they in? Their division is, and that's for the, man, they'd be 8 back of the Dodgers. Not quite. Yeah, 8 back of the Dodgers. A lot of baseball to play. He's kind of like Lugo. Honestly, like he's the hitting version of Lugo. Like you go on the market and you instantly have probably the most desirable player. They're both essentially rentals. What do? You're a contending team. You're a contending team with the most desirable assets on the market who are both rental players. And you're both small market teams. Like in the Royals are far more small market than the Diamondbacks, certainly. But what do? It's a tough call. It's a tough call. And now they face one as well. And the answer, and we'll talk to Jalen Thompson about this, to me is very clearly, you play out almost every game until you hit that trade deadline and you just see what you've got and you see what kind of offers come in. I think you very quietly say, hey, you can send your best offer. Like, I don't know what we're going to do, but if you're interested, send us your best offer. We're going to see how the next 2 weeks play and we may take it. So I don't think there's anything else for the Royals to do. I don't think that I want to see them go be aggressive and add players right now. I don't think I want to see that either. I don't want to see him trade him. I just want him to play the next 2 weeks and we'll see. But
yeah, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if Piccolo hangs out until the very last second to make these decisions, especially with a guy like Lugo. Yeah, I think that's what you have to do. I don't think you go and you make these moves right now.
Unless the only one that you would do that for is if somebody blew your socks off for Lugo, which probably isn't going to happen yet. So that's the only outlier to why that wouldn't be the play to me. Like the only reason is if somebody just got outrageous with their Lugo offer, in which case you wouldn't want them to accidentally go trade for somebody else if they were willing to give up those kinds of assets. Other than that, yeah, I mean, like, what are you doing? If like you got to just sit and wait because all this whole wild card is fascinating, and I've seen some of the national guys are like taking a step back to how wild and how much fun this season has been with the parity and everything. But we're talking about what will the Royals play? They'll play another. I mean, goodness, Tommy, before it's July 31st. Do they finish the Atlanta series before the deadline?
They do.
Or is
yeah.
it the 30th? So they basically 9 more games. You want to talk about what could happen if you go 7-2 or 2-7, like, which are totally reasonable. The whole thing could turn upside down based on what a handful of teams do here. It's going to be those games were a little too like I could feel the Royals pressing because I could feel it. I'm like, oh, like everything feels like it's so like these feel like playoff games. Like, I don't know what you can do to loosen that. Probably nothing. But it's a tough spot.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think you hang out until the very last second because, like you said, like I think it's conceivable the Royals could go 7-2 in the next 9. They could also go 2-7 or 1-8. Like it's just been wild swings. So I think unless you get an offer for like Seth Lugo that blows you away, you have to wait until the last second.
Yeah, we'll get with Jalen Thompson, see if he's reading the same thing. When we come back, though, we got a lot of other headlines to get to. We'll do it next. Sports Daily.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, here to Sports Daily. We're glad to be with you. The Summer Concert Series back in Wichita at Navskar Park this weekend. Series returns Friday, July 25th with the Astronauts live on stage. Gates open at 6:30. Show starts at 8. Enjoy free live music, food trucks, and Friday night fun all summer long. Full schedule at kfhradio.com. We welcome you back in here. We've got a little golf to talk about. We've got some TBT to talk about, Tommy. And you tell me there's some conference news that we need to be paying attention to here.
Yeah, it's nothing major, but Ross Dellinger from Yahoo Sports reported about 30 minutes ago that the American Athletic Conference is changing its name. Dropping the word athletic out of it. So it will just be the American Conference. You won't call it the AAC anymore. It'll be the American Conference or the American. They're trying to modernize the name of the conference.
Yeah,
They've got a new mascot that they are unveiling, an eagle that is the conference mascot. And so Tim Pernetti and his team, apparently they've been meeting for a long time to try to work on the branding and the vision for the conference. So it's no longer the AAC, no longer the American Athletic Conference. It will just be known as the American Conference moving forward.
The American Conference. Yeah, I like it. It's what we call it anyway. The American. The logo's not changing, which I wouldn't advise them to do. I like the logo. But yeah, that's good. It's better than the AAC. I've always thought the AAC and the ACC were too close anyway. So I think this is better. The American. I like it. I like it. Now they need to get a big fat TV deal and, you know, the Shockers dominate the league and all these things. Speaking of the Shockers, Tommy, the Aftershocks, did you watch any of the game last night?
I did. I watched quite a bit of it. It was a fun game. The Aftershocks looked really good.
They looked really good. And it's so funny because, you know, we expected Marcus Keene to be really good. And last night it was Nike Sibande, who really kind of lit it up a little bit, 22 off the bench. They brought up a good point on the broadcast. I guess in college, he was the ACC's sixth man of the year one time. So that's kind of a role he's familiar with. Taylor Eldridge reported last night that Connor Frankamp was a little nicked up. So they were just kind of taking it easy with him. But I'll tell you, Challenge ALS, that's one of those teams that are always in this thing. So, and you could see them make their run, and the Aftershocks took that run, took it blow for blow, and then put on the gas at the end of the game again and turned it into a really big win. And now they'll play the Houston team, Forever Cougs, who are the top seed, but they'll play it in Wichita. They had a big win also. They've looked really good in this tournament. And that'll be Tuesday night at Coke Arena. So if you're looking for something to do, Marcus McDuffie after the game, I saw challenge the fans a little bit. I'll be honest. I thought from what I could see on TV, and I didn't see the attendance number, I thought that was a good crowd. I thought the crowd looked fine.
Yeah, it was a good crowd, I think, from what I could see on TV. I don't think it was a great crowd. And
it's not one of those that they've set records with in this tournament. But there are fewer Shockers on the team and no KUK State this year. I think that was a very fine crowd.
And McDuffie actually did just post about 10 minutes ago on X talking about how it would be great if, you know, more fans came out for the game on Tuesday, home field advantage. We know about the way that the TBT is kind of changing things a little bit to where depending on who sells the most tickets up to a certain point, then you get that home court advantage. And so, you know, McDuffie's kind of taken that lead role, I think, to be kind of the spokesman of this team to try to get the fans rallied and get them out to Coke Arena.
Well, they need to, because you've got the potential here. If I understand it correct, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, if they can do the attendance thing and win, they would potentially in that next game, believe it's the next one, get K-State or KU. Because that's who's K-State and KU are playing in that KC region, which beating them in attendance is going to be a challenge if they're playing each other for the first time up there. I would say that task is going to be large to outdraw them collectively, which is I hope that I'm reading that right on the bracket, but I think that's the scenario that is out there right now.
I think so too. It's going to be a challenge. I think considering that you've got those two teams facing off against each other, I think the good news would be that at least if, let's just say, Wichita does not get the home court advantage, at least we're talking about a relatively short drive up the road to Kansas City as opposed to getting on a plane, right? So I do.
Okay. Yeah, let me look at this. Okay, so if I'm looking at the bracket, they're actually a round behind. So the winner of that game will then have to play one more. So they're not yet to the point the Aftershocks are. They each just won their opening games. Now they have to play, but they would still have another one. So there's still a chance that if Wichita State wins their next game, they would not play, which is kind of a bummer. But it's not still going to, because the ticket sales are collective, right? From the way you understand it, like it's a total regional ticket sales to see who hosts.
I believe so, yes.
So you still face the burden of those two playing each other at any point, because that's going to go into the total pool. So yeah, that challenge still exists. And you're right. The travel would be much easier if they just all had to drive up the street basically to go play that game. But Wichita can do it. It's a Tuesday night. It's 8:00. I don't think there's anything else major going on around. It's a little trickier because it's not quite as many Shockers. But man, the reality is these dudes are good. Like these guys are a well-oiled unit. Some of these veterans of this tournament, they looked really good.
Well, and we're not talking about tickets that are, you know, $50 or $100 or, you know, more like they start at like $10, you know, so especially on a Tuesday night when it's like 100 degrees outside. I mean, I don't think there's anything better than when there's not a whole lot else going on and it's really, really hot outside to go grab a $10 ticket and go to Coke Arena to watch basketball.
Yeah, I might look at that myself, actually. Maybe take the kids or something. That'd be fun. It's an 8:00 tip. So be ready to, you know, be ready to get after it. They'll need it. You gotta get there first. People have said, you know, this might be their best chance to win this thing, and I think they've had some really good teams. Those first two rounds, they've at least looked as impressive, let's call it, as they ever have. I think they got a shot. I don't know what the odds are right now. Maybe the odds came up. I was going to try and bet them last night, but when I looked, they weren't listed yet. But it'd be cool if you could find like an odds to win the tournament, like a TBT futures odds. I don't think it's out there, but I think they'd be as good as anybody. They've got all these guys that have done this so many times, including their own players. Right now, at this point, Marcus McDuffie and Rashard Kelly and Connor Frankham, like, they're grizzled veterans of this tournament too. Like, everybody involved, it feels like, with them knows what it's going to take to win something like this. It's $1 million for these dudes. That's dang cool.
That's become the narrative this season that I think everybody has talked about. Even the TV broadcast last night, they were discussing it. Zach Bush, when he was on our program, discussed it about how, enjoy this team as it is right now, because it's going to be harder and harder to keep it together as the years go on. Because as you mentioned, McDuffie, Kelly, Frankamp, like, those guys are getting older. And how much longer can you keep the current iteration of this team together and productive and winning games? And so, you know, the fact that we've seen fewer and fewer shockers on the team, I think, tells you that it's becoming harder to be as productive, because you've got guys that are getting older. They've got other things that are going on, like, whatever. Yeah. So get out and enjoy it now, because it's going to be difficult, I would imagine, in a couple of years from now, to have a team that is as successful as we've seen this group of players be.
And who's the next wave? Because guys just haven't been around that. I mean, it's probably Xavier Bell. I don't know who the next wave of guys who might be interested in playing this would even be, because guys are in and out of the program so quickly now. I will tell you that tonight at 8 o'clock is Purple Rain, JHX Hoops, Jayhawks. The KU alumni team is a 4.5-point favorite. I didn't watch either of them play their opening round, so I'm not, you know, I don't have a lot of insight there. The Aftershocks are 1.5-point favorites against Forever Cougs. So for what that's worth, the Aftershocks are a slight home favorite, nominal, if you wanted to take it. Maybe we will tomorrow. We'll look into that. But it was good. All right. The other big event, the Open Championship, the British Open. Scottie Scheffler gets the win. Scottie Scheffler and Tiger's parallels thus far in their careers are really oddly, eerily close. Like, somebody put up the number of days was the exact same to win the number of majors. And like, it's getting to the point where we clearly have our best shot at the next one of these, the next Tiger. He's not going to have the same impact on the game of golf as Tiger did. But if we never thought we were going to see another Tiger, another guy come in and just dominate, we're seeing it right now. Like, Scheffler is doing that.
Well, and now we're on Grand Slam watch for him too. I mean, he's one leg away from completing the career Grand Slam. He needs a U.S. Open. He's got everything else. He's got a couple green jackets. He's got PGA championships. Now he's got the Open Championship. Most recently, it was Rory McIlroy finally getting his green jacket and completing his career Grand Slam. But there's only a handful of guys in the history of the game that have done all of those, have won all of those tournaments. And so now we kind of shift our eyes to that for Scottie Scheffler going in to 2026. And the U.S. Open is always incredibly difficult, but that's really where things stand now for him. As far as the number of wins and the way he dominates fields, he just doesn't make mistakes. And you and I talk about that a lot whenever we talk about Scottie Scheffler. He's kind of like, I saw this comparison on social media, and actually I think it rings really true. Scottie Scheffler is the Tim Duncan of golf. Like, he's so dominant in what he does, but he's so low-key. You know, he's not flashy.
That's a good comp.
I think that's a great comp, because he just kind of goes about his business and keeps his head down. You know, it was interesting that he made the comments before the tournament about how, you know, winning is not all that fulfilling for him and everything. And then he goes out and blows away the field. And you kind of watch him and you're like, man, like, I'm sure he is happy about this, but how much longer will this happiness actually last for him? Because that's really not the priority for Scottie Scheffler. So he's fun to watch just because of the way that he plays. But from a personality standpoint, he doesn't have like that fire that Tiger had for so long. And that's okay. No, that's not the way that he plays.
It also doesn't feel like he just absolutely kills people the way Tiger did. Scheffler seems insurmountable. Tiger seemed like an actual tiger, right? Like he seemed like he was out hunting people. Scheffler just, Duncan is one of the greatest comps I've ever heard.
Like, I agree.
He is very Tim Duncan. He's going to do his thing. Personality wise. Yeah. I like his, I think his personality is great because these other guys, like you can't get mad at him. Like Tiger was demonstrative. You could get mad at Tiger. That was fine. Like Scheffler's just out there doing his thing, man. It's
yeah. There was a moment, I think it was on Saturday, and I was watching the coverage and he had the lead going into the weekend. And you're thinking like, yeah, there's no way he's going to give this up because that's just what he does. And he played pretty well. And then I think it was like, I don't know, I might be getting this wrong, but hole number 7, hole number 8, something like that. And he hit a really terrible iron shot into the thick stuff. And you're like, all right, well, this is an opportunity now for the rest of the field to catch him. And he's going to drop a shot, maybe two. He didn't. He was able to chip up onto the green and make the putt for par. You know, and so he just, even when he makes mistakes, he doesn't compound those mistakes. And I mean, he's just, the guy, you said insurmountable. I think inevitable is a good word for him too. Once you give him the lead, he's never going to give it back.
What is it about his game? Because I don't pay close enough attention. Because he doesn't have the most distance or anything off the tee, does he?
No, he's not the longest in the world. He's not a Bryson DeChambeau, you know, or anybody like that. He doesn't take unnecessary risks. He's not going after pins. He's not, you know, he's just like, get it on the green and you know, like minimize the mistakes that you make.
Is he a great putter? Because he's still got to score these holes.
He's a good putter. He's an all-around great player. Like there's really not anything, at least from what I can tell about him, that is head and shoulders better, like one area of the game. It's just everything is locked in and solid.
And then he never makes the mistake.
Correct.
Right?
Like he just, correct.
You got to be, I mean, you can't put up the big numbers if you're not the best at something, I can't imagine, but it's that combined with the fact that
it's a running joke that when, you know, amateurs like you and I go out and play golf, like, oh, fairways and greens like that. But that's really truly like the case. Like if you can keep it in the fairway and you can hit your green, then you're not making mistakes and you're going to score.
And avoid four putts.
Avoiding four putts is probably pretty important. Yeah.
When you're talking about my game, my game's gotten so much better everywhere else. And then I four putt.
Yeah. I got to tell you though, like coming out of that Open Championship win for Scottie Scheffler, it gets me that much more excited for the Ryder Cup because you're going to have obviously Scottie anchoring the team. Keegan Bradley said today, Bryson DeChambeau is going to be on the team. Like it's going to be, it's going to be a lot of fun, I think, for the Ryder Cup.
Heck yeah. With Gary Woodland as a coach.
Yeah.
You know, for our local tie, that's the other thing. That's really cool. But yeah, he gets it done again. He wasn't even worth betting. What we joke about Friday when he was like 5 strokes off the lead, you could get him at 2-1 to win the dang thing. I mean, that ain't good.
You're never going to get good odds on Scottie Scheffler. Just not the way it's going to work.
Yeah, man. All right. Elsewhere, headlines around the sports world. I think I said earlier the Lions lose an offensive lineman. They lose a defensive lineman. We were talking about offensive linemen, but they lose after last year too. They've got to have such shell shock from that after they lost Hendrickson. So they start in the hole. That was a pretty big headline there. We just look around. The Cowboys are in the news a little bit because of the Parsons deal and compared. I told you what I thought about that. I think the Cowboys should trade Parsons. Not this year. When is he a free agent? Like, I'm so sick of talking about the Micah Parsons contract, and then we see the J.J. Watt contract, and I'm like, what? Like, you can't do that. You can't do that deal. Jerry Jones bumbled that from the beginning. He's not a free agent. He's got an option this year. He's making $24 million, and then he's a free agent next year. I think you just... You'd have to, if you're going to trade him, you'd have to trade him right now. I haven't heard that as a possibility, but I would do it if I was Dallas. I would do it. Like, I just,
I mean,
if
what's,
you don't,
what's
you
the
really
most,
are yeah. all in for this year.
What's the most likely scenario? They're not, I don't think they're going to trade him. Whether or not they should, that's a different debate, but they're not going to trade him. I think that he ends up walking in free.
Paid.
I think he's going to walk in free agency because Jerry's not going to write him that big of a check. He'll walk in free agency when that time goes.
Jerry always caves.
For that kind of money, I have a hard time thinking that's going to happen.
Look at what he just did for CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott. I mean, he always caves.
That's a lot of money for Micah Parsons. Like, that's a reset the market type thing.
He times these poorly. That's what he does. Like, he gives guys contracts too early and then misses the opportunity to get out ahead of a deal like the Chiefs just did with Karlaftis. Now, Parsons would have been more expensive at the time than Karlaftis was, but you still could have avoided. I mean, waiting is going to cost them. If they end up re-signing him, waiting is going to cost them $15 to $20 million a year.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But they've got people saying Super Bowl or bust, which of course they should say Super Bowl or bust, but they've got to come up with a plan. They're going to be an interesting watch this year because this is the first time. When do you ever remember them not getting like any love before a season ever?
They always get like, so much love.
I feel like people are acting like they're going to be bad. They're not going to be bad. They're just not going to be good enough, but they're not going to be bad. Like, what are people seeing that make you think that they're going to be a terrible team? I don't get it. I could be missing something. Man, I don't get it at all. I think they're going to be fine. I think they're going to be what they always are. They're not going to be bad. They're going to win games where you're like, wow, that was impressive. And then they'll, you know, lose in the first round of the playoffs probably.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
We are joined by our Royals insider, Jalen Thompson, here on the program on this Monday for our weekly Royals chat. Jalen, it was a weekend for the Royals in Miami where they lose two of three games to the Marlins. But really, I think there are some positives to take away. In two of those three games, the bats came alive. But there were definitely some issues with the back end of that bullpen. What were your major takeaways from the weekend series against the Marlins?
I think that they had to win on Sunday to really generate any positive momentum coming out of the All-Star break, because you just can't come out of the All-Star break and lose two games against the Miami Marlins. That just can't happen, right? If you're trying to make a postseason run. And for them to win on Sunday is a good sign for them going into this series this week against the Chicago Cubs at Wrigley Field. Two night games and a day game. You know, it's pretty rare to have night games at Wrigley. So for them, this is a big stage playing against a team that has one of the best records in the league to really showcase what are they going to do? Who are they going to be? If you get swept in Chicago, now you're seven games under, and the trade deadline is 10 days away. So I think that's a big sign that they won on Sunday. And I think that Salvador Perez coming back and getting into form, he has six home runs in his last 10 games. I think that's also a big sign for them in the offense as well.
Well, I was going to ask you, is there any room, Jalen, for optimism in a series like that when in two of the games the offense really produced well? Is that, do they have time and room to be optimistic about that, or is it just win at all costs, don't really pay attention to anything else?
You know, when I look at that series against the Marlins, I think that you can have some optimism, but also look at who they face pitching-wise. You face Sandy Alcantara, who is a former Cy Young winner, all-star, but he hasn't been himself this year. And so you got seven runs basically off of him. And then you face a young guy in Jansen Junk on Sunday, which you hit around, but you didn't hit around until you saw him about another time through a lineup. But that game against on Saturday, Cal Quantrill, you faced him before and he's owned you and he owned you again. So it's like the offense, you can have some optimism, but you need to see it more consistently. You need to, if they go to Chicago and they hit the Cubs pitching and they make a statement, then I think you can have some optimism. But for right now, I don't know if you can.
I think one area, at least offensively, that, you know, I think is important to take a look at is the way that Salvador Perez has come out over the last month or so. You know, he had really struggled early on in the season. The average was relatively low. The power wasn't quite there the way that we had expected. But he's really, at least in the last few weeks or so, it seems like that power has come back. What are you seeing from him?
Yeah, I think so, too. You know, just from watching him at the plate, Tommy, he's not swinging at some of those early pitches that would be down and away out of the zone like he was earlier this season. Now he's kind of locked in. He's kind of refocused. He said he's been working on some things with the hitting coaches, and I think he's kind of just got his scope back together, for lack of a better word, where now he's zeroing in on pitches that are in the strike zone, and that's allowing him to drive the baseball. Also, I think with it being the summertime as well, the balls are flying out of different parks and venues. So that also helps as he's hitting line drives. I mean, he's scolding the baseball with every at-bat that he's coming up at the plate. So he's in a real groove right now.
He is in a groove. Is Cags coming? I saw he took one the other way, which is a big step for him.
Yeah.
He's got to play through it, although they did sit him the other night. Like, what are we feeling? What's the vibe with him? I don't know that I would. This is just like pure speculation. Like, his body language, he seems sometimes a little bit defeated. Is he hanging in there from what you're hearing? Like, at, you know, in his mental state?
Oh, yeah, he's hanging in there. He's doing everything he can, and he's pretty much fine as it comes to, you know, dealing with navigating a rookie season. It's not always going the way he wants to go at the plate, but, you know, he continues to work hard each and every day. And the defensive part is, I think, what a lot of people in that clubhouse is really happy and really glad to see come around. He's playing really well in right field. Yeah, he's going to have his some lapses, but that's every rookie as they're trying to navigate different stadiums and, you know, trying to learn the outfield. But like you mentioned, Jacob, hitting the ball the other way, I think that's a big sign for him. The reason why he didn't play on Saturday against Kyle Quantrill is because he has a reverse split, so he's really tough on left-handers, but right-handers hit him very well. So I think that's the reason why they didn't put him in the lineup. If you notice that, they went pretty much all right-handers in that lineup that day. Outside of Vinny Pasquantino. So I think if you look at what they're trying to do with Cags, they're going to continue to work with him. I think he's going to come around. Like I said, he just needs more bats. And the more bats you get, the more you learn different pitchers and the more you can be successful.
We got to talk about the back end of the bullpen a little bit here, Jalen. So Friday night, Estevez struggled. Saturday night, Ursig struggled. Is there any room for like major concern for those guys as we move forward?
I don't think so. I think with relievers, you're going to have nights where they're not going to be on. It's just the nature of the beast trying to come out and pitch 65 to 70 appearances a season and try to hold down a lead or protect the lead or whatever it may be. The Royals have to score runs. If they score runs, then you can sustain and absorb those nights where they maybe aren't at their sharpest. But the world's bullpen always comes into games where the margin is so razor thin and so airtight that they have to really be on and be perfect for every pitch. And that's just not going to happen each and every time out. So the only way that you can alleviate some of those bullpen lapses that you're seeing is by scoring runs and scoring early. And the Royals, they just have not shown that they can do that consistently. Like you guys mentioned, one day they score seven, the other day they score one, and they score seven again. So they have to find a way to drive some runs in. It's no secret they are one of the worst scoring offensive teams in franchise history, and that's just where we are at. And it's not early; it's getting pretty much late now. So they have to figure out a way to fix this offense if they want to go anywhere near the playoffs.
Hopefully, it's not too late. Jalen Thompson, Royals beat reporter for the KC Star. So let's talk about the deadline. Lugo is the elephant in the room. I don't know that there's urgency to do anything. I also don't know that they need to add anything to really change their trajectory. They either play better or they don't. Lugo's the one guy.
Yeah.
What is the thought with Lugo right now? Everybody's going to want him. I know he's just a rental, but what's the thought there from what you're hearing?
I think the Royals are at a point where they don't want to move him. But I also believe that they have to decide what this season is going to be. So, like I mentioned earlier, if they go and play Chicago and they get swept and they're seven games back and you're 6 days away from the trade deadline, are you willing to make that move and say, you know what, the season is not going the way we want it and let's just get something for Seth Lugo? Or do you win some games in Chicago, come back home, maybe a game under 500 if you sweep, and then you're like, we're in this, let's go. So I think this series, this week, I believe, is really going to be important for the Royals because you have Chicago, then you have Cleveland, and then you got Atlanta, and then you got the trade deadline. So for in Seth Lugo's case, I'm sure they're getting offers. I'm sure everyone is wants to add him to his rotation, to their rotation. I'll even throw in Carlos Estevez too, because what's the point of having a closer if you're gonna be out of the playoff race? You can get something back for that as well. So I think this is the week, but Seth Lugo seems like he has to be traded because you're paying him $15 million regardless if he opts into the player option. And if he doesn't, you're paying him more. Do you really want to have that in your starting rotation when you're already paying Michael Wacha and you're going to have to pay Cole Reagans again and things of that nature down the road?
I know that obviously they were able to salvage the series with a win yesterday, but do you get the sense that they're pressing? Because I think that that's kind of been off and on. Like sometimes during the season, they've looked that way visibly. Other times they haven't. I got the sense that at least in the opening two games that, especially on Saturday, when the offense wasn't coming along for them, that they were pressing a little bit. And I would imagine going into a series against the Cubs, it's going to be really difficult to not feel like they're pressing also. But you contrast that with the way the Marlins played, and they're free and loose, and they've got nothing to lose. You know, like you could just really tell the difference between the two teams.
Yeah, I think so. I won't say that they are pressing because I don't get that sense from them. But I do think there are moments where they feel like someone has to get it done. And it kind of matriculates through the whole lineup where guys will maybe change or alter a little bit in their plate appearance, where they might swing for the fences or they might try to, you know, really get this run in and it doesn't happen. I think we saw it a lot on Saturday, but on Sunday, they just went with the pitch. Like you saw Jonathan India double, you saw Bobby double, then Salvi doubles, and then Jack drives him in, and it looks like the Royals offense, right? So they have to figure out a way to do that more often. And I just don't know if they can do that with the Cubs are going to throw at them this week and just what else is going to be down the pipeline. They have a good schedule to come back and do some things, but is this offense really strong enough to do it?
We'll find out. Two games in that series, they scored runs. They didn't win them both. Pre-game coverage begins here tonight at 7 o'clock of Royals-Cubs. An interesting series. I got kind of excited about getting the Cubs in. I haven't seen a lot of this Cubs team that's so good.
They really good.
Jalen, we'll follow your work at the KC Star, at Jalen Thompson on X. We appreciate it. Buckle up. It's these next couple of weeks are going to be tight.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys for having me. See you guys soon.
There goes Jalen Thompson. Cubs are good, Tommy. Cubs are real good. They're going to have to score. I cannot. this has been a difficult year to just like handicap for the Royals. They have so many players you like, and they just cannot, outside of one brief stretch this year, string it together. We'll see. We'll see if the offense from the Marlins series translates. But yeah, Jalen's point is good. That was the Marlins pitching, which hasn't been very good this year.
So you're going to get Noah Cameron on the hill tonight for the Royals. And
we still don't know who's starting tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know what kind of run support Noah Cameron's going to get either. That's been the name of the game for him in his rookie season, pitching really, really well, getting very little run support. So hopefully that changes tonight.
That's been the thing for like all of them, but especially Noah Cameron. I'm excited for these games. I really am. Like they're fun to lock into, but man, are they intense when they're not winning, right? Like they're pretty.
They're maddening. They're frustrating. It's just
like an anxiety level with sports. Like, come on, just score some runs. It just gets there. But Salvi will help. Look, it's been a fine year. Not good enough yet. Hopefully it can get there and we'll just follow along here. I still, no matter what happens over these next couple of weeks, they are, you know, they're still going to have another month to play, really 2 months to play. And as tight as things are, you just never know. So I just don't want Royals fans to like lose hope, because this whole thing can turn upside down over the course of 3 weeks. All right, Tommy, that'll do it for us today. Thanks to Jalen Thompson for hopping in. If you missed anything from the show today, a lot to cover on this show today. You can go back and listen on the Odyssey app, the iHeartRadio app. It's all there for you. tomorrow. We'll dig into some of this a little bit more, including with the Chiefs. Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider. Boy, it's been a little slow on Chiefs news. Not anymore. We got a lot to talk about since the last time we talked to Felix Johnson. New deals for Smith and Karlaftis and a Rice suspension, so that'll be a fun conversation.
Yeah, I got some injuries to talk about. Camp in St. Joe continues, so we've got a lot to get to tomorrow on the program.
We got Royals baseball tonight, 7 o'clock. We'll have the recap tomorrow. For Max, for Tommy, I'm Jacob. See you then.